Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe. Come check out our open mic nights every other Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, which shockingly coincides with our episode releases. A special shout out this episode to our Kiwi Caffeinators down in New Zealand. You'll understand why in a little bit here, but thank you for tuning in from way down there. We'd like to thank all of our Caffeinators for their continued support by repping our merchandise and to our Patreons. Thank you so much. If you would like to become a Patreon, you can head to patreon.com/vettechcafe. If you're new to the Vet Tech Cafe, head over to vettechcafe.com. You can find out all the info about who Dave and I are, why we do this podcast, links to our previous episodes and merch and all that good stuff. So you can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and then we have a YouTube channel that we post the videos of our taproom episodes to. So like, follow along, subscribe. We really appreciate the support. Dave, how's it going out there?
It's all right here. It's I thought we were heading into summer here, but today decided that it wanted to be like 50 and rainy and cold, and I'm ready for summer.
It's getting close. You're gonna want these days back before too long. But
no, I always like it hot. I never want to be cold. Never want to be cold.
Yeah.
How are things going out there?
It's great here. It's postcard weather here today. It's one of those typical Southern California days. But it's odd. It's been cold and kind of gloomy the last couple of days. And then today is really nice, and tomorrow it's supposed to get kind of cold and gloomy again and be so for another week or so. So it's just like you, I think it's still not quite summer, but I got outside. I got some gardening done today. So that was really nice to get outside and do some of that.
Gardening,
so
huh?
Yep. I now that I have a house here, I love to garden in the front and the backyard. It's a big, now it's a big hobby of mine.
I don't picture you as a gardener. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
I mean, we used to be gardeners, but then we realized that we have jobs and don't have time to keep up with it. And
yeah,
it's embarrassing when when you plant something and then like 3 weeks later, it's a jungle and we're just like, forget it.
Well, you just gotta find the right stuff that fits your needs.
We have neighbors that love to grow stuff, and they give it to us. And we have an overabundance of eggs with our chickens, so we trade produce for
heck
eggs
yeah.
all the time. Like
heck yeah,
I would rather just collect the eggs than deal with weeds and and watering and all that crap. I'm happy to just give away chicken eggs in exchange for produce.
There you go. You got your own little like neighborhood, you know, co-op there.
We do. We have a bit of a co-op here.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, we've got another great episode lined up today, Caffeinators, and we've actually been working on this one, I guess, really, Dave, since IVEX last
September.
Yeah. This is when this kind of all came about, but we've been trying to get this episode scheduled now for at least. I think I remember the first time we had it scheduled was for February, and both ends have had to reschedule at least a time or two. And if you'll understand why when I tell you, for me, it's a 19-hour time difference with our guest. And I think for you, Dave, that makes it a 16-hour time difference, which is just wild. So we have Ashley Walsh coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today from down in New Zealand. So she's a registered veterinary nurse and a veterinary technician specialist in emergency and critical care. That's how we came to meet her at IVEX in September. She graduated with a diploma in veterinary nursing from Unitech in Auckland, New Zealand in 2009, and again got her achieved her VTS in 2022 and got pinned last year. She is the first and currently the only VTS ECC to work in New Zealand, which is amazing, and is one of two Recover certified CPR instructors in the country. Currently, Ashley is the primary critical care nurse at the Animal Referral Center Central, where she assists in the day-to-day running of the ICU department. Additionally, she's the nurse education coordinator, providing in-house training, organizing the hospital's annual in-house nursing conference. And then in addition to clinical work, she serves as the as an executive member of the New Zealand Allied Veterinary Professional Regulatory Council, which is the board that regulates allied veterinary professionals in New Zealand. And we're going to talk a lot about all of that stuff today. So fasten your seatbelts, because we're going to have a long plane ride here down to New Zealand. Ashley, thank you so much for, A, for taking the time out, for being patient with us trying to coordinate all of this. I know I'm thirsty. What can I get you for a cup of coffee?
Well, the weather is getting rather cold down here in New Zealand. So I've started back on the herbal tea. So ginger tea for me, please.
Okay, absolutely. I hadn't even considered that as Dave and I are talking about it getting warmer in summer, that means it's getting colder and towards winter for you.
Yes, we've had some miserable weather.
Oh gosh. Well, if you don't mind, take us through your career path, kind of what got you into veterinary medicine, some stops along the way, and what you're doing now, and we'll jump off from there.
Yeah, so I guess I got into veterinary medicine because like the majority of people wanted to work with animals and wanted to help them. I kind of fell into veterinary nursing. I did my diploma, was really fortunate, worked at a great practice throughout my diploma, and they really encouraged me and supported me and taught me a lot. When I graduated, I moved to Australia. I lived there. So I started off in GP practice, wasn't really enjoying it all that much. I was just seeking more, and I fell into emergency nursing. So one of the vets I was working with in the GP, I said to him that I was looking to learn something a bit different and do something a little bit different from what I had been doing for the last few years. And he said, oh, well, come meet my bosses. Like, I'm sure they'd love to meet you and chat to you about potentially and hiring you. And so I went there and had a great conversation. Can you start? And that's when I ended up in emergency. And I have loved emergency medicine ever since. I have thrived. I love the sometimes the chaos. Sometimes it's you can do so many different things in one shift, and you can cover so many different areas of medicine in one shift that I really, really enjoyed that. And then that's when I started looking into, well, how can I progress in this career? How can I learn more? And I discovered VTS. And essentially, I've been in emergency ever since.
It's kind of unique. You're the only VTS in your country. And when I was going through my VTS application, like, I didn't really have anyone that lived in my area that I could use for mentorship, you know, and you being the only one in the country, like, there's nobody for oceans away to help you out. So how did you manage that with trying to navigate that? Did you have a criticalist with you, or what kind of help did you have?
Yeah, so there are other VTSs in New Zealand, but I'm the only ECC one. And I guess I kind of started my VTS journey while I was still living in Australia. My boss really encouraged me to look into it and to consider that pathway, but I didn't know any VTSs at all. There was a bit of a trial and error with my application. So my first application, I very much went into it blind and was like, oh, I can totally do this, and was not prepared at all, and didn't get accepted. And I'm fairly certain I went through a pretty serious grieving process associated with that. That made me realize it was something that I really, really wanted and that I really did want to work towards. And then shortly afterwards, I went to a conference at University of Queensland where Amy Newfield and Tasha McNerney spoke at, and Trish Farry had organised that conference. And I was like, yeah, these people are so cool. I really, really, VTS is where it's at for me. So I basically pulled apart the application and looked at all the feedback that I was given, all the different requirements I needed to hit, and just slowly started chipping away at them. I originally then planned to apply in 2020, but then with COVID, And then I also moved countries during COVID. It wasn't really the year. So I was just really fortunate that I had people in my workspace who are really supportive of me. I didn't work with a criticalist at that stage, but I worked with some amazing emergency vets that had 20 plus years experience under their belts, with nurses who had 15, 20 plus years experience under their belts, who all supported my learning processes and what I needed to achieve in order to get to the VTS application stage. So I just basically worked really hard. And then I was fortunate enough when I moved back to New Zealand and I started working for ARC, they employed a critical care specialist. And so I, at that stage, had been accepted part A and was waiting for part B results, and having her around to help support me through, especially from part B to the exam, was amazing, having that support from her. It was an interesting road, but I definitely learned a lot from my first application not being accepted. Like, it was very much, I went in pretty blind, but learned heaps, got some great feedback, and then really took the time to pull apart what I needed to achieve in that time frame to get where I wanted to get.
I had a similar situation where, not with the application I passed in the first try, but the exam I did not pass in the first try. And coming out of that exam, I was like, I was not ready for this. And getting that feedback and getting my butt in gear and saying, I got to do this, I think was a big, big step. And there's so much to be said for getting into something that you think you're ready for and you're just not ready for. But second time around, you got through it. And I just wanted to say that those of you that know Amy Newfield, if there is any recruiter for anything in the world, Amy Newfield is the one that will do it.
Yeah, I just remember sitting there watching her lecture and I was like, she's so smart. Oh my gosh, she's so cool. I was like, yeah, this is definitely like what I want to be doing. Yeah. And it's just, I think it just came down to determination at the end of the day. Like, I knew it was my goal and I discovered there was a very big learning curve associated with it. I mean, that's part of the process, really, is learning. I mean, like, the amount that you learn in the process is absolutely insane. Like, it's just, even from people like between like submitting my part B and sitting my exam, I was literally like, I got to the point, I was like, if I don't pass this time round, I've leveled up so much anyway. Like, the learning is just so cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always said, no matter pass or fail, just going through the process, you're going to be a better 100%. Technician.
Absolutely. 100%.
Like, you just, 100%. Yeah. I was like, I'm just a different person to who I was a year ago. Like, without doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where do you see the technician profession? We're going to ask some questions about New Zealand specifically, but the vet tech profession as a whole, kind of focused on where you see it in your country, but on a global aspect, where do you see the profession itself?
Yeah, it's a really interesting space at the moment because there's lots of different conversations happening about like the next phase for veterinary nurses and veterinary technicians. Like, I kind of feel like we're almost on this like evolution almost, like this next step. Like, we're talking about regulation a lot more. We're talking about this conversation about advanced practitioners coming up. I think veterinary nurses and vet technicians are very much thirsty for more learning, more responsibility, maximizing our potential, because like we're capable of so much. It's insane. Like, we are very driven people. So I think we are the things that need to get into place for this next evolution for our industry is starting to happen. I think that's a really cool thing to witness and to be a part of, is especially here in New Zealand, we're trying to get regulation and registration, the law for to practice as a veterinary nurse in New Zealand. So being part of that, the foundations of it in order to get to that point is really cool.
And you mentioned the fact that, you know, technicians are doing more. Here in the U.S., we have a big kind of push towards vet tech utilization. Is that something that's going on in New Zealand as well?
Yeah, I think vet techs and vet nurses in New Zealand are definitely being utilized significantly better than when I first graduated.
Yeah.
I think where, especially now with having more accessible CPD with everything being more online, I think that's been a really hard thing in New Zealanders accessing, especially in the emergency sector, good CPD. So being able to provide that education, like you can do all sorts of courses online now, you can do VTS. You don't have to be like, 5 years ago to do my VTS exam, I would have had to travel to the States, which I don't have to do anymore. So
yeah.
We now have that accessibility right. here in New Zealand to create those opportunities for nurses to learn and do more. And with registration happening, I think it's just going to, like, registration's the first step as to what we can create opportunities for our nurses to be able to do. Really excited about the possibilities.
Nice. So I think let's start there with, you mentioned the registration. So, like, what does the education piece or the practical application piece or what have you look like to become registered or licensed as a veterinary nurse in Australia? And then does that, like, what is, do you guys have title protection or scope of practice? Like, take us through some of that, you know, what that looks like in New Zealand.
Yeah, so in New Zealand at the moment, you don't have to be registered or regulated in order to practice as a veterinary nurse. You can practice and use the title of veterinary nurse without any qualifications, which is something we're looking to change. So we have the full backing of the New Zealand Vet Council for this pathway that we're trying to carve out. So at the moment, the most common educational pathway for veterinary nurses is a diploma in veterinary nursing. There is also a degree in veterinary nursing that's available, and that's almost, it's a bit of a tack on to the end of the diploma. So you do your 2-year diploma, and you can go back and do a 3rd year, which is your degree. So that's the most common pathway at the moment. Though, like I said, we don't have any title protection in New Zealand. Our scope of practice, it doesn't exist. So these are things that we're currently creating in order to carve the pathway so that we can have registration. And we're currently doing a lot of industry-wide surveys that have been done on behalf of the NZVA, which has been really cool to witness. Don't have a timeline, unfortunately, for when registration will happen, but we do seem to have the industry backing for it. There's definitely been a lot of positive response and a lot of people, like we have at the moment, it is voluntary registration that we currently do for veterinary nurses. So there is a membership list. You can look up a veterinary nurse and see their qualifications. And we have almost 1,000 people volunteering to be on that list at this stage, which is a very big proportion of veterinary nurses in New Zealand. It's really cool.
Wow.
Is there a vet tech association in New Zealand?
Yeah. So we have the New Zealand Veterinary Nursing Association. They are our like nursing association that does like representation. And then we've got the AVPRC, which is who I'm a member of, who is the registration side of things. So we kind of work in tandem on different ends of the spectrum with regards to the veterinary nursing industry in New Zealand.
Gotcha. It's nice to hear that you have good backing and support for that, because here in the States, I feel like that's a big hurdle that we have is, I don't know, maybe an older generation of veterinarians that still don't think we need to be licensed and what have you. And I like to think that as some of the younger veterinarians or the newer graduates, maybe the last 10 years, they seem to be much more supportive, but there's still a big divide between, you know, what we think we need and what they think we need. And it's good to hear that you have such support for that, because that's like a huge, huge hurdle here.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like that. We definitely have that generational difference as well, but I think we're probably, well, at least from my perspective, the people who want the registration are definitely more vocal about it and definitely put their weight behind the support, where I think people who don't support it probably just keep it to themselves. You don't really hear too much about it. They kind of just get on with their day and do their thing. And yeah.
Okay.
I mean, for the most part, we do have very good support here in New Zealand, which is awesome.
Good.
And are there different, like here we've got 50 states. Are there different regions in New Zealand where there's like different regulations and laws for different areas of the country?
No, so we don't. So we have like, we do have different regions in New Zealand, but it's just one.
So it's all just one.
We're such a small country that we just have the one regulation. Yeah. There's not, it doesn't differ from region to region. It's like that's
that must be so much
similar to how it is in Australia with the different states almost. Like, but yeah, no, we're too tiny for that.
I mean, I think that makes it easier.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I think it is advantageous in that, yeah, we don't have to. I always struggled looking at the states and all the different states and all the different requirements. And, like, it's very confusing, but then I'm also not used to it like you guys probably are.
Yeah. And do you guys ever, like, obviously just because of proximity, do you guys ever work with Australia on some of this stuff as they're trying to maybe accomplish some of the same things? I mean, obviously you guys have to kind of fight your own battles, so to speak, and do what you need to do in your countries. But like, is there ever any kind of working together to accomplish some of these things, or is it completely separate entities?
It's pretty separate. I think we look to each other for like inspiration. So we'll kind of be like, oh, well, how is Australia dealing with this particular topic? Or this particular subject, but there isn't really any collaboration as such. But we do kind of, hey, how have you guys tackled this issue? Or, you know, kind of neighborly assistance or advice.
I think that's how it is with us in Canada too. Like Canada has a lot better foundation in a lot of ways, kind of across their provinces, and in a lot of ways, we look at like, What is Canada doing? They seem to have it together a little bit better. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you hear about the VTS in, like you said, you didn't really know any other VTSs where you are. So how did you come across it?
So it was my boss in Australia. So we did have a VTS ECC working for us, which is Carol Harvey-Stevenson. I met her briefly at the beginning of my emergency career. So she knew her and knew that she had done VTS and said, you know, Ash, I really think you should check it out. She knew I was just wanting to learn and I was looking into different emergency like courses that I could do, or like I was like, is there a diploma I can do? But at that time, there wasn't really much available online and there wasn't really anything available locally for me in Australia. So was really difficult. And she said to me, I really think you should check this out. I think this is your cup of tea. I think that you can do this. Like you're quite capable of achieving this and it's something you should look into. So at first I was kind of like, nah, it's because I wanted at that stage something that was going to be more of a structured course. So that my first initial reaction, which this is probably going back like 2015 or 2016, was, oh, you know, it kind of looks like something that I'm not ready for, like I'm not experienced enough for this. And then I kind of circled back to it in 2017, I think it was, is when I started looking at it again and going, actually, you know, this does look like it's something that I want to do and something I want to do. And I, at that point, had met Trish and I'd heard of another couple of VTSs online. I was like, okay, this VTS ECC really seems to have some weight behind it. Like everyone I've met is like, really amazing. They're really intelligent. They really care about the industry and they really want to progress it. And I kind of feel like my goals are aligned with that. So that's when I started taking it a bit more seriously and started looking into it and if I could actually achieve it.
Awesome.
And why do you think it is that there's, like, no offense, Steve, why is it just you? Why aren't there other people that want to do this?
I think in New Zealand, it's not foreign subject, but it's not as commonly known. Like I find often in New Zealand when I'm introducing myself to people, I'll tell them I'm a vet nurse and they're like, oh, cool, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I work in ECC. And then if they start probing, then I explain to them I'm a vet tech specialist in emergency critical care. And often they've not heard of it before. So like our veterinary industry is very small in New Zealand, especially the emergency side of things. And this is something, I mean, I think there's less than 20 of them in Australia as well. So over there, it's not like VTS isn't as common as it is in the States. So I think unless you've met someone who's a VTS or you're someone who does like a lot of avid online education, it's not something you come across quite a lot. So I think it's just, it's partially exposure But also the veterinary industry in New Zealand has a very high turnover. Like our veterinary nurses generally only last 4 to 5 years in the industry before moving on, which is not really enough time to do a VTS. Finding those experienced nurses who do qualify to sit for your VTS is pretty, not rare, but it's not in every single practice. It's, I mean, like I look at our practice and I'm the only VTS in our practice. We're the largest veterinary hospital in New Zealand. We've got one other nurse who's currently applying for her anesthesia and analgesia, and then that's almost it when it comes to people who qualify. We've got a couple of others who are very, very close, but it's the people, like having the experience behind you is a big thing as well, I think.
I was going to ask, so since you've done this now, you know, because you're the first with this credential, with the ECC VTS in New Zealand, how did your hospital recognize it? Like, I know you said they were supportive and all of that, but like, you know, I guess really how has your role changed, if at all? And then now that you have it, are you aware of anybody else in New Zealand that's kind of looking to you that maybe as a mentor that wants to do VTS and ECC that maybe wants to go down that path?
Yeah. So when I first started my current hospital, I was working in the emergency department doing night shift and weekends. And then when they hired our critical care specialist, she needed a nurse to support her. And I was the first choice. And to the point where, because I had already applied for my VTS and been accepted for Part A. So they said, well, Ashley has the most experience here. She is working towards her VTS. She's the obvious choice to work with the critical care specialist. So that was probably the first change I had in my role, was going from working weekends and nights to working with a critical care specialist full time, which was my dream come true. It was amazing. And then I got asked to help provide educational opportunities at work. And so I really enjoy teaching. I love spreading knowledge about emergency critical care or anything related remotely to emergency critical care. So I got asked to be the nurse education coordinator, which is a role that I really enjoy. So we do the in-house nursing conference each year. I do, I hold talks. Recently, we've started holding talks online for veterinary nurses around the country. So last week, I did a first talk online, which was very nerve-wracking but very exciting, which vet nurses from all New Zealand got to chime in and do. So that's been a big part, I think, of doing my VTS, is learning how to teach as well and getting that next level of knowledge that helps me feel secure in teaching people. And I've had quite a few, a few people come forward and ask me about my journey for VTS and advice that I have for them. I have a nurse at work who I'm mentoring towards VTS, as well as I've got a couple of other people who want to do their VTS at work, who have come to me and said, hey, what's your advice? Can you help me? Like, I need some guidance. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about it. Let's sit down and discuss it. Like, how do we make your plan to get you to where you want to be, which has been really cool. So not somewhere I thought I would be 5 years ago, but there have been quite a few changes, but really, really cool changes. Yeah. Being able to kind of, I feel like, guide the way for people who want to venture down that path and discover what the possibilities are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just takes one. I mean, like, you know, once that first domino falls and people see that you did it, that they can do it. I mean, that's awesome. I would be curious too, like, as you're going through this process, once your application's been accepted and you're going to take the exam, or maybe even in the application process, did you have a mentorship group? Did you have like a Facebook study group? That's how Dave and I met. We were in a big study group in our year. And it was, I don't know, Dave, what was it, like 20 or 25 of us?
Yeah, about 25, like that. Yeah.
Maybe even more. And so I'm always curious, especially, you know, you being the only one going through that process in New Zealand, like, how did you kind of network did you just do it all on your own?
No. So the year I sat my exam, one of the other nurses who's now left and has moved to Canada, she was doing her anesthesia and analgesia exam as well, which was great support. Her and I also had the same days off. So we would meet up at the library, go studying together, even though we're studying completely different topics, just having that moral support And the kind of encouragement to study was great. We also had an online study group, which was absolutely amazing. I don't know what I would have done without that group. They definitely got me through. It was really tricky trying to attend some of the study sessions because of the time difference. I found that really hard.
Yeah,
but it was, yeah, they were amazing. We had a group chat going, and just constantly checking in on each other was great. And then I got to meet them and get pinned with them at IVEX, which was super cool. So I've been talking to these people online for ages, and then suddenly we're meeting in person, which was really, really cool. So I think I've made some great friends out of that as well, which is nice bonus to come out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff and I are so old that our study group was all, it was all text-based. Yeah. Like, there was no, we didn't have Zoom. We didn't have any video conferencing. It was it was in a VSPN like chat room.
You literally like typed out your sentences to each other, and we were just like literally typing like LOL back and forth in chat rooms because we couldn't stay on task. But yeah, it was, so funny how just in such a short time it's changed so much.
I mean, technology has really changed the whole process for everyone, I think. I can't imagine trying to achieve this 10 years prior. Like, I think that would have been so difficult.
Even you just a little bit ago saying, you know, now that you can take the test in New Zealand instead of having to come to the States, like, that's huge for opening it up to more global candidates. That's awesome.
Absolutely. The accessibility is just totally different now. I was talking to a vet nurse last week who wants to do her VTS, and she said to me, she's like, the biggest thing is like, if I sit the exam traveling to America, and like, if I don't pass, then that's another trip, and it just stacks. And I was like, you don't have to worry about that anymore. I said, if you're looking at ECC, do it online. And like, I did it, like, I literally didn't have to do like sort out anything major. It was super simple process. I said, you know, most VTS applications do allow you to do online now. I mean, like, if you don't want to do ECC and you decide to do something else, check in, have a look. Like, it just changed the whole process. It's been great.
I think I don't want to say we have COVID to thank for that, but I think we have COVID to some degree to thank for that, because without COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of like the kick in the pants to do a lot of this stuff. Like, it truly was.
Like IVEX. Like, I had never been to IVEX at all. And then in 2020, they're like, oh, we're putting it online. I was like, this is amazing. And I've been able to attend IVEX every year since, even if it's not in person, because it's online. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say was the first one. You know, I was doing lectures from my couch in Rhode Island, and I was like, this is a bummer, but it's actually also kind of nice.
Well, and I think doing it virtually, I think we all miss kind of like that connection of seeing the people that we know and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Jeff, you said this in the middle of COVID, is that if we don't learn something from this, it's all for nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. If we don't learn how to do things differently coming out of it, then absolutely.
Well, why don't we take our little break here before we get too far over our halfway point, as we are always going to do, and we'll be right back after the break.
Looking to protect your canine patients against parasites? Look no further than Simparica Trio, Serolaner Moxidectin and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets, the first chewable to offer triple protection from heartworm disease, ticks and fleas, and roundworms and hookworms. It's also FDA approved to block infections that may cause Lyme disease by killing deer ticks.
Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures, Serolaner belongs to the isoxazoline class, which has been associated with neurologic adverse reactions. The most common side effects were vomiting and diarrhea.
Visit SimparicaTrioDVM.com for full prescribing information.
The Vet Tech Cafe is sponsored by BetterHelp. Caffeinators, at the Vet Tech Cafe, you know we like to focus on mental health. If you're struggling with depression, burnout, compassion fatigue, or any of the other mental health challenges we discuss on our podcast, getting professional help is a great first step.
We all need help with things like learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, which empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major mental health challenges.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Dave, I've used BetterHelp. I had really good success with it. I really liked that it was entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can also switch therapists at any time for no additional cost.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. They really make it easy for you to get the help you need.
Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vettechcafe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vettechcafe. It's time to invest in yourself. Be well, caffeinators.
Everybody, welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe, which is now quickly turning into Martin's Cat Cafe. Actually, we just had our ad for BetterHelp, which is an online mental health company.
Therapy platform.
Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. we always like to ask our guests coming out of the break how they manage your own mental health. Someone who has recently gone through the VTS process, I'm sure you've had some mental health struggles. So how do you manage your own mental health?
My first thing that I do, which I learned the hard way, was having some healthy boundaries around work. I find that because I've definitely gone this industry because I love animals and I want to help them, that I struggled, especially when I first got into emergency medicine, around having those boundaries that, like, actually, no, like, I can't come into work today. I have to put myself first. I very much was the person who was always putting a hand up for an extra shift, or I'll stay back late, it's fine. So learning how to put those healthy boundaries in place that are flexible, like, I am not, like, very strict. It's not a concrete wall, it's movable. And that making sure that I do actually put myself first. I really enjoy taking the time out to travel a little bit. So I love going for, like, a road trip and going to the beach. Being around water and in nature, really, I find quite soothing. And going for, like, a little hike in the forest. I mean, in New Zealand, you're never far from the coast and you're never far from a bush hike either. So grabbing the dog and grabbing my camera and taking that time out just to focus on the here and now, I think I really, really enjoy doing that. Yeah, that's probably my favorite thing to do to manage my mental health.
I like it.
I was looking at the map of New Zealand before we came on, and I was like, oh, it's quite a thin, yeah, thin island. So it must be easy to get to the coast from.
Yeah, I think the furthest you're ever from the coast is like an hour in New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
Which I found really bizarre when I was in Denver at IVEX. I was like, I've never been so far away from the ocean before. And for some people, that's probably not like a big deal, but I'm so used to just being able to go down to the beach whenever I feel like it. It was really bizarre. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, if you're going to do another in-person IVEX, I would recommend, I think it's 2025, Dave, that's San Diego. Is that right?
Yeah. I am looking at coming to 2025. I'm hoping to come every second year, I think. I loved IVEX so much. It was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. That's a great plan.
So, that's where we took our exam. And
Yeah. That's where we took our exam, yeah, and it's about an hour from me, yeah. It's a beautiful spot.
Was memorable / not memorable.
Not memorable, yeah, yeah.
All right, where are we with our questions?
So, I'm curious, like, obviously working ER, you probably do a lot of dog and cat and, you know, maybe some birds and some rabbits and things, but I'm curious if there are any types of things that are unique maybe to New Zealand, either that be animals you work on or, you know, maybe certain types of snake bites that are unique to your area. I'm just curious what kind of unique cases or patients you may have that for us are like, yeah. Wow, that's.
I don't ever have any unique patients. I only do cats, dogs. We occasionally get like a guinea pig or a rabbit. That's about it. I guess what's new, unique about New Zealand though is what we don't have. So, I mean, we do have a very unique native population. So, in New Zealand, the only native animals are reptiles and birds. We don't have any native mammals at all. So, all the mammals in New Zealand are introduced animals.
Why is that?
Yeah, so our bird population, reptile population is really unique, but we don't have any snakes or anything like that either. So we have zero snakes in New Zealand, which is like really cool because when I moved to Australia, I was very stressed about the sand dunes and walking in the bush. But like you learn very quickly, it's not as big of a deal as you think it's going to be. But when you come from a country that doesn't have snakes, that's a big deal. But yeah, I guess we don't really have anything crazy in New Zealand. We have some really cool birds though. Like people who are bird watchers love coming to New Zealand to check out our native population.
So there's no native mammals.
Wow.
Can you explain why that is?
I guess New Zealand was a super isolated piece of land. And we now have obviously like wild rabbits and we have possums that were introduced from Australia.
Sure,
do get like we have a wild deer population now, but it's all introduced.
Sure.
None of it was originally here. New Zealand was just a giant piece of land with a lot of birds and a lot of lizards.
That just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Wow. My ignorance. I mean, obviously, I knew you guys were separated, you know, by the channel there, but like, I just kind of assumed a lot of the native animals and things were really quite similar, and you would have the same snakes and things. That's
fascinating. I would have thought that the snakes kind of throws me for a loop because you'd think you're so close to Australia,
crazy. At some point, there were snakes in New Zealand, but no, there's nothing. Yeah, so you can't even have a pet snake in New Zealand.
Wow!
Really?
Yeah, you can't. Snakes are illegal.
Oh wow!
I'm fairly certain they're illegal. You can't bring them in. So.
Wow, that's actually probably smart to prevent basically that from happening. That because otherwise people will release them and then you're inundated and.
Yeah, and they'd probably destroy our native wildlife.
Do you have very strict regulations on rabies?
We don't have rabies in New Zealand, so yes, very strict. Our biosecurity is the strictest in the world. Everything, unless you're coming from Australia, everything has to, or like any animal that comes in has to quarantine in. They have to have all their shots done. Like we don't even have like heartworm in New Zealand or anything like that. So yeah, very strict.
Do you have mosquitoes in New Zealand?
We do. We do have mosquitoes, but we do not have heartworm. So
that is
wow. I'm going to be thinking about this segment like at least for the rest of the night. This is blowing my mind for sure.
Getting back to your work as a RVN in New Zealand, are there things that you have to do? Or challenges that you face that we wouldn't see in other parts of the world. I almost said other parts of the country, but other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think probably our biggest hurdle is probably access to like CBD, which is definitely improved since COVID. I think while in New Zealand, I wouldn't say we're necessarily behind, but we're quite progressive. So we move things pretty quickly when we decide to make a change, which is really good. But yeah, I guess like in New Zealand, like in-person conferences, we don't have many. Like we have our annual conference with the New Zealand Vet Council and the New Zealand Vet Nursing Association, which is coming up in June, which is going to be really cool. And I think the World Small Animal Veterinary Association held their conference here probably close to 10 years ago now. So in-person conferences are hard to come across. But now there's so much available online now. It's absolutely incredible. Like the access, that problem's almost kind of eliminated. Just with, even with IBEX going online, the EMCA also do a lot of stuff online. And a lot of it, like merely education, they do heaps of stuff online. It's really cool.
And for those of you that are listening, not in New Zealand or maybe Australia, CPD is continuing professional development. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that the acronym, which is like what we call continuing education here in the States, or I guess Canada calls it that too, but same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. If you're, because Jeff and I are both going, what the heck is CPD?
we've
never heard
interchangeably here in New Zealand. Like CE is common thing to hear as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. So like one thing I think we struggle with in the States is like public perception of our profession. The whole, like we just play with puppies and kittens all day. And I think this is one thing that in the U.S. we really look to Canada for, because when we do RVT week in October, Canada does like RVT month, and they do a whole public relations campaign, TV, radio, and I'm curious how it is down there. Like, you know, do people have an idea that you know, you are who you are, and you don't necessarily want to go to vet school and be a veterinarian, and that you have this amazing profession and you've accomplished all this cool stuff, or do they just like see you and, you know, not really have any concept?
I think it's definitely getting better. I think sometimes, so I got asked to take some photos for a website and for vet nurses, and the person who asked me to take them said, look, can you please just make sure it's vet nurses doing their job? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, I don't want any pictures of like you just cuddling cute animals. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And she was like, because that's all we do is like we're at work, we see like a cute animal. That's like a 2-second snippet of our day, and that's what we post on social media. So we tend to perpetuate it ourselves as well. But I think there is definitely a lot of change happening with regards to that, especially with more of the younger generation. I do still often get asked when I'm going to become a vet, which I have to very politely explain. This is my job and this is my career and I love what I do. I think that I have a great job, and but I don't have any plans on becoming a vet at all. So it's definitely, that perception is definitely still there. But I think it's changing. We have Vet Nurse Awareness Week in October each year, which we spend, like, especially my workplace is really good at trying to explain the difference and put forward their nurses and say, hey, look, these are our nurses. They're amazing. They're really good at their jobs, and we couldn't do it without them. It's definitely, the perception's still there, and we're just working on it, slowly chipping away. Every person that I can explain to them what my role is and looking after the animal, I think, is helping to change that perception.
You mentioned earlier on that turnover was a big problem in your country.
Yeah.
And I think you said it was four to 5 years is the lifespan of a technician, and we've been saying, what, Jeff, five to seven. So you're
5 to 7, I think. Yeah,
we've been saying that for a number of years, so it's probably changed by now.
Yeah.
but why do you think, why is that, why does it seem like it's worse in your country? Is there something different? Are your techs not respected, or is the pay not as good, or what is it?
I mean, I think our industry as a whole is a lot smaller, so the amount of, I mean, it could be better than 4 to 5 years now. It might not be. I don't have the exact numbers on that. I think.
Sure. We don't either.
Yeah. I think in New Zealand, until recently, the career pathway options for vet nurses have been pretty limited. Either you go into practice management or education, and that's kind of been it. And so I think vet nurses who want more than that then find another path, like another career to follow that pathway and achieve more. So I think, well, I'm hoping now that there are more options available for nurses, and now especially the industry expanding, we've got so many more opportunities happening, that that's going to help encourage people to stay. I think we've had a really good, the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, we've been having some really great discussions around mental health and how to look after your mental health in the industry. Because I think a lot of people get into the job because they love working with animals and they want to help them. But then they don't look after themselves and end up burning out, don't know how to manage it, and just leave the industry completely as a result because it's not managed appropriately. And I think the medicine as a whole is revolutionized a little bit as well. It's not just an NGP. It's not just, especially like in your general practice first opinion, it's not just we're just going to desex all these animals and send them on their way. Like, there's people wanting to invest into their pet's health. They're wanting to do the best they can by their patients or by their pets, and that allows the nurses and the vets to do the best by their patients that they possibly can and take that next step with medicine, not just doing the bare minimum. So I think that helps a lot as well. Well, I'm hoping it helps. I would love to see veterinary nursing in New Zealand become a much more sustainable career than it has been.
Yeah, I think all of those things, like, they all play, they're all a piece to the puzzle. Like, you know, it's not one thing that's going to solve it all, but it's all these little things. If you can do the little bit here and the little bit there. And One quick thing I'm curious about is I know you mentioned as far as education goes, you know, the 2 year and then going back for the third year. Is there just one school in New Zealand? Are there multiple options? Like, how is it hard to find somewhere to get that education?
Yeah, so there are multiple options in New Zealand, including distance learning. So you can do distance learning if that's what works for you. So the diploma and the bachelor's degree in veterinary nursing are offered through what we call polytechnic colleges here in New Zealand. So they often offer like 2 year programs, occasionally the 3 year, but the 3 years are usually more in the university level schools. So, I mean, in Auckland, I think there's two different providers. There's pretty much a provider in most major cities in New Zealand. There's like two in Auckland, one in Hamilton, one in Tauranga, Bay Plenty area. There's two in the South Island, and there's one in the South Island that offers distance learning. So that does make that more accessible for people as well.
Gotcha. And I know you've said you've been doing some like lecturing and putting some of that, you know, training and stuff together. So, you know, now that you have had your VTS for a little while, I'm curious, like, what other things do you want to do with it? Is there anything out there that you're like kind of still building up to or working towards or what have you?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying teaching at like emergency related topics. So I definitely enjoy and that started with my colleagues, just like sitting down like a group of 10 people and having a discussion or presenting on a topic. And then that has started to grow. I guess like immediately after my VTS, I was kind of like, "Well, I need a minute to
from this." Like, that's fair.
Yeah, I think it took me a few months before I was like ready to think about other like studying again. I guess like I finished my exam and I was like, "I need to not vet med for like at least a week just to do something like be a person again. That would be great." I think it took me a while to kind of come up with some new goals, especially because like for a long time VTS was at the top of my list, and then I achieved that and I was like, oh okay, now I need
now
new
what
goals, a new direction, and where do I take this now that I've hit that mark. So that's when I did my CPR instructor certification, which is something that I've been thinking about because I really enjoy teaching CPR. So I guess I've kind of just started pulling together some ideas for what I want to, what direction I want to kind of want to go into. I am really enjoying teaching people and lecturing, even though it's very intimidating. It's very cool. So I think I'm probably going to look at dipping my toe into speaking and just providing educational opportunities where I can for people. I think is going to be the direction I go into.
Excellent. Well, as we're getting down towards the end of our hour here, I can't believe it's already been almost an hour. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you wanted to get out to the listeners? Anything about being a vet nurse in New Zealand? Anything about the VTS and ECC? Anything you want to share that we haven't talked about?
Probably like nothing in particular, but I think it's important to in this career have just like an open mindset and be willing to learn and grow, and it could take you anywhere having just that mindset that you can do the things that you want to do. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, for sure. So now that you've been in that seat chatting with us for this hour, is there anybody that you think we should interview in a future episode or a topic you would like to hear discussed in a future episode?
So, I always love listening to Marcia Fletcher talk. I don't know, she's a VTS here in New Zealand. She was the very first VTS in New Zealand. She's an anesthesia and analgesia. She's amazing.
Okay.
She presented at IVEX last year for the first time, which was really cool. She's a really, really awesome person to speak to. I highly recommend talking to her. And I guess subjects, for where I'm at, I really like listening to how people got into speaking and how they got into that kind of route, tips and tricks, things they've learned along the way, because I find there's not, unless you actually go up to a person and be like, how did you do the thing? And there's not much out there on that, actually. Like, it's pretty sparse. So, yeah, I think that's an area that I like to listen to at the moment.
I will. Yeah, for sure. And I will say, though, I think for me, when I was starting to get into speaking, the best piece of advice I got was from Ken Yagi. And he said, find your niche. Mm-hmm. Like, find what it is that you love about emergency medicine or critical care, and then become the authority on that.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, and it's because ECC is so broad. I mean, you can, and I mean, you know, so many of the lectures are not only applicable to ECC, but I mean, triage or, you know, some of those basic things also apply just like across the board. But if there's one thing that, you know, like you really gravitate to this kind of patient or whatever, he told me, you know, like become the authority on it. And that always stuck with me. And I've anybody that asks me that question, that's usually what I say is whatever that thing is that, you know, really draws you, then, you know, that's a good place to start. Cause then you come across as a passionate, right? Excited speaker when you're talking about something you really
absolutely.
Love.
Yeah. And I think that becomes infectious.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of infectious, like one of the people that I always look up to as a speaker is David Liss, because he could give, David Liss could give a lecture on changing out the hard drive in a computer and it would be entertaining. And I always try to model myself after the way that he speaks, and that he's engaged, he's excited. Because I did this when I went through my 2 years of teaching, is that once I realized that I was bored giving the talk, it was time to leave. And if you're bored about your subject, the people listening are going to be bored. So be enthusiastic, be excited, have that infectious personality. Yeah. And, that's my little take on speaking. But yeah, I would love to have somebody on that.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to think of she's a retired technician, Jeff. You may remember her name. She was in ECC for a long period of time. She gave talks on how to give talks.
Was it Nancy Schaffrin?
Nancy Schaffrin. Cool. That's the name I'm thinking of. I don't know if she's even still in the field. I haven't.
Yeah, I actually, Ken has said like she was really instrumental in his speaking career. So that might be somebody we want to see if we can get in touch with. That'd make for a great episode.
We're brainstorming ideas right in the middle of the episode. All right, Ashley, we are now down to your would you rather question. Are you ready for it? I should have come up with something New Zealand related, but I know nothing about it other than it's a very skinny island. All right. You have to pick number 1, 2, or 3, and I will give you the question that corresponds with that.
Okay, number 3, please.
Number 3. This is one Jeff came up with. Would you rather have an eyelash in your eye that you cannot get out, or a ringing in your ears that just won't stop?
Oh, probably an eyelash in my eye, because when you said ringing in my ear, it just reminded me of a fluid pump. Like, you know, when you get home, you can still hear the fluid pumps going off.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I could deal with that.
Yes. I have been out of clinical medicine for like 3.5 years now, and I still hear fluid pumps. So yeah, I the phone ringing or whatever it is. Yeah, absolutely.
I was recently working some shifts with a traveling mobile surgeon, and we were in one practice that had, I don't know what kind of birds they were, but they had birds that were in the clinic. And one of the things that they would do is that they would mimic the noise of the anesthesia monitoring machine alarming. And I'd be like, is there something going on? Like, nope, just the birds. That's one of the things that they picked up. That would drive me crazy just to hear that.
Oh, gosh.
That beep, beep, beep.
Oh gosh. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for taking some time out to chat with us. It was great to meet you at IVEX in person. It was great to reconnect again. I'm glad we finally got to do this, and thank you for sticking with us through all the reschedules and the time change. So glad we got to have another guest on for our international series. It's been a lot of fun. I think maybe. Dave, this might be like the 7th or 8th different country we've had on, maybe even more now. And I feel like we talk a lot about a lot of the same problems. Like we all face the same challenges, and it's nice to hear that like we can actually work together, I think, in a lot of ways, in a lot more ways to, she might've just dropped off. to kind of work on some of these problems. So, Ashley, thank you so much for your time. It was great to have you on. Caffeinators, hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Let us know, follow along, like us, follow us, subscribe, all the good stuff, and we will talk to you again soon.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, Caffeinators. We wanted to thank Dog Days Consulting for managing our social media and helping with the interior design here at the Vet Tech Cafe. They don't just do social media. They can help you identify your brand through brand coaching. The founder is a CVPM with 15 years experience in veterinary practice management. They are a small business proudly serving the veterinary community, and we are thrilled to be working with them. Check them out at www.dogdaysconsulting.com. Hey, Caffeinators! We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As everybody is well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession. In addition, we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave or Jeff as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity inside or outside of the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com or visit our website www.vettechcafe.com. Lastly, whatever platform you utilize to hear our dulcet tones, please rate and review our podcast and like and follow our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages as well to see what we're up to. From all of us at the Vet Tech Cafe, have yourself a great day.